Red Monk Radio, episode 34.
Hi, welcome to another edition of Red Monk Radio. If you'd like to subscribe to this podcast, please go to peopleoverprocess.com and look in the sidebar for the URL that you can put into iTunes or whatever podcatcher you might be using. Also, if you'd like to send a comment, please email it to podcast@redmonk.com and feel free to send along text or audio. We'll take either. And with that, enjoy the episode.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Red Monk Radio. One of the pieces of feedback we've heard from our audience is that they certainly would like to hear more practitioners and less kind of floating talking heads. And with that in mind, I'm really happy with the group that we have on the line today, particularly because we have an enterprise customer from a company called KBC, and we're going to be talking specifically to that company's use of the mainframe and some of the cool new things that you can do in terms of mainframe development. So it's going to be a somewhat practitioner-focused Red Monk Radio, and that's something that obviously we like to give the audience what they want. Further to that, I should say that really this episode comes to you, is brought to you by IBM. IBM has provided some sponsorship, and you're certainly going to be hearing some IBM voices on this call. Anyhow, I think at this point the best thing to do is to introduce the people that we will be speaking to today, or at least let them introduce themselves. And on that note, I would probably say, let's start with the customer. So over to KBC, and why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, Levin?
Yeah, hello, James. My name is Levin Khalid. I work at the KBC Bank and Insurance Company, and I'm responsible for the setup of development infrastructure for our core business logic development.
Great. Okay. Well, that's a good, clear explanation. And certainly for those of you out there that are thinking, oh, is this just about mainframes? Well, it's not. It's about business. It's about development generally. And from what Levin just said, you know, obviously this is just a classic architectural decision that they're making. So who else do we have on the call? I'd like to get Ray to introduce himself at this point.
Hello, everyone. This is Ray Jones. I'm with IBM, and I'm responsible for mainframe software sales worldwide.
Okay, again, that's pretty clear, and I'll just put out a warning here. If you're competing against Ray, the only advice I can give you is probably don't. Do not get into a street fight with this man. He's an extremely aggressive individual on the ground. One other person that we have to introduce on the call here is Stefano, who's going to be talking to Rational and what it's doing in this space. So, Stefano?
Yes, hi, James. I'm Stefano Sergi. I am the market manager for IBM Rational for the Enterprise Generation Language, EGL.
Okay, great. And we also have the fabulous and furry Cote online, so why don't you say hello to the folks that probably already know you, sir.
Hello there. It's good to talk to everyone early in the morning.
Sorry about that, Cote. That's the problem with being the technical man. As you know, you need to get up pretty early.
Of course. I think it just comes with the trade.
Indeed. So at this point, I think it would make a lot of sense to really hand it over to the customer, and let's start with a business view rather than immediately dorking out, although we will be doing some of that later. So if I could just ask you then, Levin, a little bit about sort of KBC's business and what are the business drivers and imperatives that you need to support that have led to some of the technical decisions that you've taken.
Yeah, perhaps I can give a brief view on that. In fact, KBC is a bank and insurance company, and over the past few years we've done some acquisitions in Central Europe. Currently we have about 12 million customers, and you can find them in Belgium mainly, but also in the Czech Republic, Slovak Republic, Poland. And in total, we have about 50,000 employees. So as you understand, we have done some recent acquisitions, and of course, management wants us to work cost-effectively. So one of our main drivers now is to create synergy between all those different companies. And of course, ICT will play a very big part of that.
Okay, great. And ICT is quite a European usage. For those in the U.S., that basically ICT is information communications technology, what we tend to call IT or IS. So that's just a little bit of a translation there for you from Europe to the U.S. So in terms of the scale of this business, I mean, obviously when you're talking about that you know, the 12 million customers, you're talking about 50,000 employees, what are some of the real scaling requirements there? I mean, are we talking, what are the kinds of workloads that you're needing to support?
Yeah, well, of course, we have large business domain areas. I mean, we have insurances, we have stockbroking, etc. But we're talking into figures like millions of transactions a day. So that's the kind of business we've been doing over years, but now it's growing due to our recent acquisitions.
Okay, great. And at that point, I think it would make a lot of sense to actually then, you know, drill down a little bit into the technology choices that you've been making of late in order to support this ability to do rapid acquisitions and mergers and integrations. So why don't we move from the business discussion down a little bit into the technology that you've chosen that the organization is betting on.
Yeah, perhaps I can tell you what our main architecture is. In fact, we have a three-tier application architecture. We work with a very thin front end, which is just a web browser. We have a mid-tier logic, which runs on WebSphere, and there we do some native Java development. We've been rolling out that technology for the past 4 years, and it works just fine. And as a back-end system where our core business logic and data is located, we use ZOS mainframe.
Okay, and I'm in London here, so if you're hearing sirens, it's because they're coming to take me away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think at that point it might make some sense to, wow, this is, they're sending a lot of them to get me. Anyway, it might make sense to basically ask Ray, is this pretty standard or is this unusual? Are you seeing the same sort of patterns with other customers, or is KBC doing something particularly unusual?
The high-level pattern is being repeated across many hundreds of customers. Now, that being said, what we find is that every customer has their own unique challenges and opportunities, and quite frankly, we've been doing a lot of work with the customers at KBC to tailor a lot of our software to help them do exactly what they want to do.
Okay. And at that point, I guess we should maybe dive down a little bit into that, and obviously, Cote, you haven't jumped in yet, which may mean that I'm sounding professional, or else I'm just plowing on into oblivion.
Well, I think it's a fine mixture of both.
Okay, good. Well, I'll keep plowing on then. So in terms of what you needed to achieve then, and the work that you've specifically done for KBC, I guess there are a few questions here, and it might be Stefano that wants to kind of jump in, or it might be Ray, or it might even be Levin decides to jump in. But, I mean, obviously a lot of people just think, although you just mentioned WebSphere, they think, mainframes, that means COBOL development, and that means a lack of skills. So is that the case, that it's just a real challenge to get programmers?
Well, perhaps that's something I can comment. We come from a native mainframe environment, so we have some developers present who are skilled in actual mainframe terms. I mean, I'm talking people who dream in terms of IMS regions and DB2 tables. But as we've done some recent acquisitions, we've seen some ICTers joining us who do not have that experience, and we want all of these people to develop joints for the same goal. Now, that's not pretty easy, and for that, we needed some solution that provides us for our developers to be focused on developing the business logic and not really concentrating on the details of the platform.
Okay, and I understand the technology that you've chosen here is a technology called EGL, and the best guy to talk to that is obviously Stefano. So, Stefano, what the heck is EGL?
Well, EGL, you can think of EGL as a simplified high-level programming language, if you will. It's very productive, and it's very easy to learn, and it's basically totally platform independent. That is, developers can write an EGL program and then let EGL itself generate the code, whether it's in Java or COBOL, to deploy to any platform, in a variety of platforms that are supported by the enterprise generation language.
Okay, so enterprise generation language is it's just a 4GL, right?
Well, I mean, you can certainly think of it as a 4GL. I would like to say that it is the kind of the evolution of what people think traditionally is F4GL. In fact, we ourselves at IBM have pioneered and invested heavily in developing fourth generation languages. But the culmination of this has been this enterprise generation language technology, which is actually quite different from the traditional 4GLs. It's basically has, we eliminated what would be the drawbacks of traditional 4GL. For example, the EGL does not require a special server environment that controls the execution of the code. We generate native, you know, honest-to-God native COBOL and native Java that can take full advantage of the qualities of service of the runtime environment instead of having to run under the control of these traditional monitors.
That makes a lot of sense. And at that point, it's interesting. I noticed that Levin used the wonderful acronym IMS, and it may be for some of our audience that are not really so familiar with mainframe subsystems, they'd be very happy with some of the newer acronyms. But if we're going to ask some question about native generation of code, what are these subsystems that are going to perform so well, or at least perform in the ways that you're needing? And I think IMS and KIX would probably be two of the key subsystems we'd be targeting. And at that point, I have the Universal Mainframe Wikipedia generator called Ray Jones. And he can tell us a little bit about what is IMS and what's KIX and what are these environments?
Gee, thanks, James. For those of you that don't know what they are, KIX or CICS is a thing called Customer Information Control System. It's been around since 1969, and the net of it is that it's a transaction monitor, and it's a transaction monitor that manages containers between a mainframe and a user. IMS. Likewise, is a or information management system, has been around since the mid-60s. Likewise, it is a transaction monitor, but it's also a database manager of a particular kind of file structure, namely hierarchical files and information.
Okay.
And it got its start with basic bill of material processing, and to this day, it's still very efficient at doing that and similar kinds of database data communications implementations.
Okay. IMS was from the Apollo program or something, right? Or am I remembering my history incorrectly?
Actually, it came out of Rockwell.
There you go. But
interestingly enough, that very first program has gone through several mergers and acquisitions, and it's now running at Caterpillar, which I think is in both Belgium as well as the U.S., and that very first program that was written over 40 years ago is still up and running and delivering business value today. But I mean, to the earlier point that the customers were making, James, and that you were, what we're trying to do here is basically provide a modern, open-source, front-end development environment, and we're working very closely with KBC to build that out, whether it be for the old 3GL languages, EGL, or Java, and in effect, let the customer use highly productive, modern tools and then deploy the application to wherever it makes sense with minimal knowledge of the back-end deployment involvement, even if it's a mainframe using IMS or KIX.
Yeah, hey, Ray, my spidey sense is tingling here. Did you say the magic word open source there, and would you care to clarify what you're talking about?
Eclipse.
Oh, so we're talking about the Eclipse framework, and that's the level at which it's open source.
Right.
Any thoughts that you might actually open source EGL itself?
That I don't know.
Stefano?
We're actually, funny that you asked, so we're actually looking into that specific issue. We're considering open sourcing the kernel of EGL specification.
That's very interesting. Guess what, folks? You heard it here first. Not just a podcast, but scoops as well.
I didn't say we have all planned and all the ideas.
Oh, no. Wait, in that case, safe harbor. We're not pre-announcing anything here, folks.
Correct.
This is loosely structured, but hopefully nothing bad will happen. Don't worry. We did not announce that. It was a scoop without a definite end result. How's that?
That's perfect. Perfect. I might like to add a couple of things about EGL. The fact that it's sort of environment agnostic and easy to learn kind of addresses one of the issues that the KBC was facing, that is that issue of the fragmentation of skills, right? You have people specializing in doing one thing, for Unix and C, other people specializing in COBOL and mainframe, others people specializing in Java and observers. And what you end up having is these skill silos, right? And they kind of trap you in a little bit and kind of paralyze the responsiveness a little bit of the organizations. And EGL basically is designed to help with that issue.
Okay, great. And we've heard a little bit from the marketing people here and the IBM representatives, and you know, I think at this point it would make a lot of sense to go back to KBC and just ask, well, you know, we've heard a little bit about this EGL and its benefits. Can you talk to explicitly the benefits that you're seeing EGL bring your organization there in terms of delivering new applications and integrating the new companies you buy there, Levin?
Yeah, that's something I wanted to comment on, because it's very correct to say that we do not want to achieve a system with the skill silos, where we have large numbers of users having very expert skills in very detailed methodologies. So we rather want a group of general developers who should not worry too much about target platforms. And then, of course, you still need some experts, but they should be small in number compared to your larger group of developers. So mainly our objective there is to have interchangeable developers. We can swiftly allocate developers up to upcoming business needs. Therefore, it's also important that EGL supports a component-based architecture, because that also is a contribution to the fact that we can do acquisitions and very swiftly enable new companies on the same platform.
And that was one thing that I know is not unique to KBC, but that I think EGL is interesting in helping solve as a technology is. You can't always control the developers that you may have at your disposal, and therefore the skill set that you have, because you might be doing a whole lot of acquisitions and mergers. And so it seems like having a technology to help out with that is an interesting thing, because you don't have the assumption of, well, just hire the programmer or the developers who have the skills.
Yeah, that's correct.
How long has that been sort of the way things are at KBC?
Well, our acquisitions date from, I think, the earliest ones were something like 6 to 7 years ago. And especially the merger of our different ICT departments is fairly recent. So from the 1st of May lately, we were joined into one big group ICT department trying to create that synergy, that cost reduction. And from that point of view, somewhat earlier, we started looking into solutions. And there EGL popped up as a possible solution for our objectives.
Okay. And what are all the sorts of range of skills? I mean, have you got any, like, sort of little, you know, funny little stories about, you know, some particular developer that had some weird skill that you didn't know what to do with and they've ended up being really productive? Any individual stories or narratives?
Well, you're a bit too early for that. In fact, we are just rolling out our EGL solutions, so I do not have any success stories yet from actual individual developers. But I think within a short period of time, we must have such.
Well,
I think I can hear a follow-up coming on, eh, Cote? I think as soon as they get these practitioner developers rocking with this stuff, we shall definitely be doing a follow-up, assuming that KBC is still willing to talk to us after this.
Perhaps so. One of the things I'm kind of interested in for this particular customer case, but from anyone who wants to chime in is what sort of the life cycle is for implementing a feature or getting some piece of code done all the way from conception to running in production across, whether it's running on Z or using EGL and what the particulars are. Because I think it always helps illustrate for people what sort of a suite or a solution is actually what it looks like. So I don't know, maybe KBC could start off with some particular problem they had, and then we could figure out how what it would look like when it was being solved throughout the business on each of the different platforms concerned.
Yeah, well, one of the big cases that we have now is the fact that our whole platform for insurances is being outdated. I mean, it runs on really old technology. We're hitting the limits there. So we had a very big business case there, trying to develop an entirely new platform, which is quite rarely that we actually can start from a greenfield situation.
Right.
But we have this opportunity here to do it. So we want to do this in the right technology that leaves us the most flexibility at a later stage. And that's where we aim at EGL, to provide that flexibility for us. So, in fact, we're talking about a major project here, one of the largest projects that we've done over the past few years. So we want to make sure that we make the right choices in it, that we have the most flexible solution in the end.
And then at the same time, you want the, I would assume the reason that mainframes are involved, that Z's involved, is for the transaction reliability when it comes to things like that.
Yeah, and in fact, with the volumes that we see and about the degree of stability that we are aiming for, mainframe currently is the only answer that meets all of these requirements. I do not say that we do not have other systems like open systems, and for smaller needs and smaller cases, we actually want to deploy some applications also to open systems, and there comes another benefit of EGL into place, the fact that we can generate a code for both of those platforms. But when we're talking about large transaction volumes, I mean, there is no doubt in our mind. We have to run it on mainframe because that will give us the stability we need.
Right. And so someone would go into the EGL tool, which is Eclipse-based, right, and sort of do they map out the business process and then sort of push a button and code is generated, or what does it feel like when you're actually using that setup?
Well, our developers mostly have a flexible GUI to work with. That's one of the first items. I mean, instead of starting typing in things in, green letter typed windows on mainframe, that's history. I mean, they don't do that anymore. They have a nice tool on the PC where they have all the flexibility of text replacement, text search, I mean, all extended features that are present in that tool. And they do develop code. They write EGL, which is a rather flexible kind of language, somewhere in the mix between Java and COBOL, if I can say it like that.
Sure.
So they write something which is pretty easy to learn. And at the moment they want to deploy code to a system, then they actually need a generation and a build feature to run it on the actual platform.
Okay. That's a nice overview in a nutshell. So, do you have some more questions along those lines, James?
No, I mean, I think that, this is pretty clear that you've got an organization here that is evidently committed to mainframe, really around service levels and transaction volumes. They're obviously trying to achieve something new. I think we will have to do a follow-up to hear a little bit more about the usage of EGL, because at the moment it's almost a statement of direction, rather than certainly something that's in production. I think as far as the podcast has gone, well, we know what it is, we know what it's about, we know what the customer is doing. This is all goodness. I think I might just have one final question for Levin that would really talk to, do you need to be running all the latest mainframe stuff to do this? Have you got the latest and greatest from IBM, or is this stuff that you can run on your existing mainframe MIPS?
In fact, from our current setup, we can live with whatever is present. I mean, EGL works fine in our current environment. I should also say stability is important for us. That means that we do not always start implementing new technologies right away from the minute they become available. We first want to see things mature a little bit before we start them implementing. But our current situation works fine with EGL.
I know on this call we can't get too into where you are in terms of mainframe purchases and all of that, so I'm not going to press you on any of that.
Yeah.
I think at this point, rather than making this a long, long, long call, as I say, if you'd be willing, I'd love to invite you to do a follow-up, perhaps when you've got some more experience, the tool under your belt. Certainly for me, I'm just about ready to sign off. I'd give a final opportunity. Ray, is there anything you think we've missed?
No, I mean, I just getting back to one of your earlier questions, James, service-oriented architecture is really getting a big take-up around the world. I mean, it's certainly not a mainframe thing, but lots of customers are finding that it's far better to reuse what they've got than to rip and replace it. We continue to work with customers like KBC and build out the capability to let them modernize their application environments and their application inventory rather than try and reinvent the wheel only to find out that they can't because they're not quite sure what they were reinventing to begin with.
Okay, I think you might have slightly misspoke there in saying that it's not a mainframe thing. I mean, of course, though, it's a very broad trend across a bunch of different areas, but to your point, what you're actually saying is that the mainframe is very much a peer and a publisher and a consumer of services within service-oriented architecture. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, the way that I think of it is that, in a sense, particularly as it relates to service-oriented architecture, a mainframe is just another server, right? But one of the things that customers tell us over and over again when we talk to them is that, you know, where they deploy the application downstream really matters a lot, right? And so on the one hand, a mainframe is just another server. On the other hand, it has some unique attributes, very rigorous security, highly available, very scalable, so that it can drive significant benefit downstream after the application is deployed there. The key is build the application upfront with the most modern and productive development environment, and then deploy the application to a place where it makes the most economic sense to operate. And if that happens to be a mainframe, we've in effect rebuilt the mainframe to accommodate that paradigm very well.
Okay, that makes sense. And you know, I guess at that point, talking about just tooling more generally, I got Stefano online. Is there anything you would point out about what's happening in this space, or some of the things you think are really significant?
I was just trying to chime in on the SOA thought and just look at EGL. Also, when you think of SOA, when you think about building services. Services are business things, right? These are business services. They have to be long-lasting, and it doesn't really matter what technology they will run on, although, yes, it does from a quality of service standpoint. But the point I'm trying to make is that EGL is designed from the ground up, being so neutral, for expressing business logic, business in getting business information, and therefore creating services. And in fact, EGL contains in the notation of the language the notion of service itself, and generates all kinds of artifacts that enable you to deploy them as web services. So it's very well suited for the evolution towards SOA.
Okay. Well, that makes perfect sense. I think I've, I think that probably just about wraps it up for this.
James, do you allow me to ask one more thing from KBC perspective?
Funnily enough, I was about to give you the final word.
Yeah.
So I was going to say that just about wraps it up for another exciting episode of Red Monk Radio. But at this point, I think the best person to wrap it up is the customer. And to that point, over to you, Levin. What final thoughts do you have for us today?
Well, I also want to stress that we've talked a lot about tools and technology, etc., but in fact, what we were looking at was not just a tool or a language to program in. We were looking for a global solution, and after that, we really appreciated the cooperation with IBM. It means we actually had conversations with IBM management where we were allowed to put our concerns and our needs forward. Currently, we occasionally have teleconferences with the IBM labs, you know, the sort of thing where people start to talk in hex mode. But also on the local scale within Belgium, I mean, in our project itself, we had an IBM architect running with us, and we also had a cooperation with a Belgian company, Assist, which is an IBM business partner. So we have the feeling we did not just get into a tool or a language. I mean, we're looking really at a global solution, and we're actually hoping that a lot of other customers will join that sort of community working, and that will only benefit to the maturity of EGL as totality.
Okay, well, having said we were going to wrap up, you just got me off on another riff. I'm going to say, that's right, it's all about the business. In terms of mainframe devs talking hex, one of my favorite stories in that regard is the guy I founded Red Monk with, Stephen O'Grady. His first job out of college, strangely enough, was programming DOS VMBSD, VMBSD in a lingerie manufacturer in the Midwest. In the U.S., and he told me a great story about one of the sysprogs there who, they used to work in the office together, and, one guy, the sysprog, comes over to Stephen, and he had some problems using Microsoft Word, and Stephen was thinking, wow, this guy really doesn't get it. What an idiot. He can't even use Microsoft Word. I can't believe it. The guy knows nothing. And continued to think that for some short period of time until one day he had some code to debug. And took it over to the sysprog and handed it over, and the guy just handed it back and said, "Can you please bring me the hex?" At which point Stephen's eyes boggle, and the guy brings over, Stephen brings over the hex, and the guy goes, "Oh yeah, it's an error in line such and such. This is your problem." And Stephen learned a very valuable lesson about hex, command lines, And that you don't always think someone's dumb because they can't use Microsoft Word at that point.
And the completely underserved in-hex word processing market.
That's right. There may be a market opportunity for us there, Cote. Don't give away too much of that.
Anyway,
I think on that note, which is that, you know,
I was going to say, I mean, and you know, from my perspective, James, this has been delightful because I've finally been able to put a hex on Red Mug Radio.
There you go.
Oh, well, yeah, just like ETL is a 4GL, it's only natural. We didn't get that one in on the call, so I thought I better drop it in now. The problem is with podcasts is sometimes you just start rocking at the end. We can't talk forever because the audience will give up on us.
We can record a whole other mainframe pun-off podcast.
There you go, a mainframe pun-off. I mean, I think one of the things there that really got me about KVC, I mean, often when we're talking to IBM, it's about, you know, how do we get more people to touch the mainframe? I think for KVC and their business needs, it's about getting the mainframe to touch more people. That would be my final pun or gnomic utterance. So thanks very much, folks, and this has been great.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, take care.
We actually ended up talking a little bit more after we tried to wrap up there. So here's the rest of the recording, where I was caught mid-sentence saying that it's always interesting to see distributed and mainframe culture come together and what ends up happening.
Always fun to see what happens when they encounter each other.
Yeah, in fact, I've been a Unix guy for about 10 years, and I've been using mainframe only since 1 year, so I'm a good example of that.
And how was it fun switching or adding mainframes to the things you dealt with, or how did that go?
I had to learn a lot of terminology at the beginning, of course, because mainframe has a very specific terminology.
Yeah.
In fact, I got acquainted with it quite well, which was a bit of an astonishment to me. I thought it would be a very difficult thing, hard to understand, but once you get a grip of it, it's pretty feasible.
Yeah, it's funny you say terminology. At one of the previous companies I worked at, some friends we worked in distributed, as we came to learn we should be called, the distributed group. And we were getting some coffee one day, and a lady walked up and heard us talking, and she said, "You guys work in distributed, don't you?" And then we kind of looked at her funny and said, "Yeah?" And she said, "Yeah, well, I work in mainframe, and you guys talk like distributed people." And it was just funny to she could just even pick up on what we were talking about, just getting coffee, that we work on, I guess, you know, PCs instead of mainframes. So
yeah,
there definitely is that terminology barrier between the two.
Yeah, that's true, because also open systems have its very specific terminology.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We sometimes joke that if you take a J and you add two more letters, you probably have a Java technology.
That's absolutely
true. I don't know,
in
some ways it's a little bit like the old, I think, Oscar Wilde saying about, you know, the UK and America, which is two nations separated by a common language.
Right.
It's kind of, this is almost the opposite of that. Actually, it's separated by an uncommon language, when in fact a lot of the core concepts are the same.
You know, while we're just chatting here, one of the things I've been noticing in a lot of the sort of grid-like or even J2E sort of things recently in the distributed world is, it seems like more and more a lot of distributed things are becoming more mainframe-like, and especially when it gets into virtualization, it's always interesting to see the distributed world get very excited about virtualization, and then, you know, it's been around in mainframe land forever, and it seems like there's a lot of benefit to the distributed world to try to pull some of the understanding and practices over into that sort of discussion, you know, not to the exclusion of mainframes and everything, but it seems like there's a lot of reuse and relearning that could be avoided.
Yeah, I think that's correct. In fact, if about 5 years ago you talked to me about a transaction monitor, I mean, what's that? On Linux, you have an operating system and you have an application, and that's it. But we see that the need to handle transactions grows. We see things arising like a transaction monitor, and then you get the picture where things like IMS and IMS and KIX come from.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, it's funny that you say that. This is Ray, because, you know, a couple of years ago we actually took a lot of our ZOS designers and developers and moved them over into grid computing. I don't think there's any coincidence.
right. No, I think you're right. Whenever I learn more about mainframes, I'm an old Java developer, right? So J2E stuff is always in my head. But it's always it's always fun to read something about mainframes and then realize, oh, that's why they did it like this in J2E, or this was, you know, one of the problems and solutions that they were trying to get around to. And so I think there's, to be frank, it's a lot more fun to understand what's going on in the distributed world, especially in this sort of enterprise class distributed world, if you have an understanding of the history of mainframe things, because it makes it a lot easier to understand the goals of lots of designs and architectures that people have.
You bet. And I mean, well, I think in some ways what's really happening is that what goes around comes around.
That's right. Yeah, well, that's something that James can attest to, that we always come to a lot is whether it's old wine in new bottles or it can also be, you know, new wine in old bottles. It happens a lot. But that certainly is true in the tech world, that we keep recycling the same ideas just in different contexts and from different people.
And operating environments are like wine. They get better with age.
That's right.
Hardware is like fish. It certainly doesn't.
Levin, do you actually write code? Do you actually write programs?
Am I a coder?
Actually, sorry, James. Actually, business applications, no, but I've done in the past more than nowadays. Nowadays, I'm more like in architecturing things. But in the past, I usually wrote things like glue logic, like scripting, some small C programming, that sort of things. But actual business applications, no. I was always in the support department.
Yeah. You know, thinking about people migrating from one platform to another and going to mainframe, and as your case, you know, going from Unix to mainframe, if you had to, basically learn how to program for the mainframe, that is not as simple as, even though you're doing the same stuff. You're getting data, you're manipulating it, and you're displaying it, but it's totally different.
Yeah, that's why we like the level of EGL, where you can actually hide a bit of the biggest complexity and actually give people something they're already familiar with if they were already using it for open systems. So,
right. So if you hire new people from the university,
yeah,
they don't get shell-shocked looking at exec CICS commands.
Yeah.
Or IMS interface.
Well, there you go. And on that note, I think we captured...
Just a sec. This is Todd, and I'm going to jump in here for a second if I can. There was, when you asked the question about open source, there was a specific response that I was thinking of. You do have a little bit of a scoop here, and the real answer to your question about open source was, you know, we're very interested in looking in and figuring out how we can enable our business partners and ISVs to extend EGL when and where they need to, and that might be in the form of taking advantage of some new technology or new runtime, like enterprise service buses, et cetera, other platforms. Who knows? They might even write generators to compete with us. So that's kind of the answer, and open source might be a way that we could do that, or there might be other ways, but that's something we're interested in doing.
That's very cool, and frankly, open source would be, I think, a great approach to thinking about how to do that.
Yeah, definitely. If you have a platform or an application and you're interested in extending it, right?
Absolutely.
Then,
we don't want
to somehow enabling open source to be involved, whether that's through plugins or a complete sort of open source. I mean, there's a whole wide spectrum. I think it's more or less a surefire way to make it possible to extend things out and even get people extending things. Because then you have the sort of long-tail volume thing to take advantage of, in that if it's just out there for anyone to use, statistically there's anyone out there who could do it.
I wasn't quite sure, you know, how much freedom of we have and
well,
how
all
much
we're doing
can
is
we
expressing
say,
ideas here and interest and requirements that customers have levied on us, and you know, we don't know how we're going to implement it, but we certainly are interested in meeting those requirements.
Yeah,
very interesting. And
you
know,
how it evolves.
I know that one of the great sayings from I believe it was Bill Joy at Sun Microsystems is that innovation happens elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's about lowering the barriers to participation. It's not about raising barriers to entry. It's about lowering the barriers to participation so that smart people can extend and do cool stuff with what you built. I mean, IBM's Irving Wadolski-Berger, I guess, would call it collaborative innovation. And certainly, to Cote's point, if you want to enable that extension of something that's been done already, that's potentially a fantastic way of doing it. We're having quite quite an IBM heavy Redwood radio session at the moment. We were talking about scripting languages on System I on a recording we did yesterday. So, to use Cote's favorite word, exciting.
Well, you know EGL's big into System I, too, right?
Very big.
Actually, I had not thought about that, but of course it would be. Well, I'm thinking about doing a call with Nigel Fortledge, who is a System I user. They do a lot of PHP on Linux on I. And if we do something in that space, who knows? Maybe we'll ask Rational if they want to come and tell us the EGL on I story.
Awesome.
That would be great.
Great. Well, this has been very good. I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Okay, me too.
Okay, thanks, everyone. Thanks for your time today. And, thanks for joining us on Red Monk Radio. It's we certainly very much appreciate it.
Okay,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Good fun. Thanks.
Have a good rest of the day or afternoon or whatever.
Yeah, there you go. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.